It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Friday, August the 1st, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G, and don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. It seems like we're doing one every other day here. Busy time of the year, busy week. Outside of the postseason, probably the biggest and busiest week of the year in the base on the baseball calendar. And maybe you throw the winter meetings on there, but the trade deadline, I don't remember a trade deadline like this. Forget what the Mets did, just the amount of activity. Heck, I don't know if I remember a winter meetings with this much activity. And we learned a lot about the league over the last couple of days. Obviously, a bunch of teams, mainly the teams that were in the postseason hunt and have trying to solidify a postseason hunt, showed you that they're going for it. And we could talk a lot about the Mets. Now, you were joining me just a couple of days ago as we talked about the new bullpen, the super bullpen the Mets put together. So I'll dive a little bit into that if you haven't listened to the last show. But really, the only difference between since we left and now was the acquisition of Cedric Mullins. And obviously an overall trade deadline recap here, so to speak. So hopefully, if you haven't, you get a chance, and maybe, and I'll apologize in advance for this, there might be some duplication of conversation, but I had a great time, and he does an incredibly good job. Our good friend Anthony Rivera over at Subway to Shea, we had a live stream. I was fortunate enough to be able to be invited and take part of it. Great questions from the audience. It's a great format. I mean, I've talked about doing a Twitter Spaces, and then Anthony came to me and said, hey, would you like to rather do a live stream? I'm like, sure. You know, the interaction's a little different than the Twitter Spaces, but you still get your point across. We had a great live audience. I'm really looking forward to seeing how the YouTube replay, if you want to go to my Substack, it's free for everybody. The link is there. I'm sure you'll be able to access it and watch the show in its entirety. I think it was about 90 minutes. We had some fun. We had some serious conversation. We dived into the trade deadline. We also veered off, as Anthony and I always do, and I always enjoy doing collaborative projects with Anthony. He does great work, and hopefully you listen to that too, in addition to this show. So we are now officially in the third and final phase of the season. And maybe you say it's three out of four because the postseason's number four, but the regular season, and it's now go get it done. There's no more about what the Mets need to get. Oh, could they do this trade? Could they do that trade? You know, we're really, the whole front office business, which really entails a lot of the offseason, and in a lot of ways, a big chunk of the first, 100 plus games of the regular season because of the trade deadline, that's now in the past. Now it's about baseball. It's about getting the job done. It's about finishing the job here at hand. And, you know, the Mets, after a wild 48 hours the day before and into the deadline, have put themselves in a position where, and I said this last night, and I'll get deeper into the Mullins move because I think that's the one I haven't talked about. And I don't really think there's a lot to it other than it's an opportunity. But the Mets really have put themselves in a position where, realistically, short of some really major swing in a bad way of performance, I don't see how they at least walk away with a final wild card spot. Because as I sit here this morning and I look at the landscape in the National League, and I think they have a good shot at winning the division. I think the Phillies made an upgrade with their closing situation with Duran. And obviously, I like Harrison Bader. I really liked him last year. I was a little disappointed when they let him go and decided to bring in Siri, and I understood why they did that. It was an 80% savings on the overall cost, especially when they were going after Soto. But outside of Cincinnati, who made some acquisitions and clearly still wants to make the postseason, who else is really going to seriously challenge for, let's say, the 85, 86, 87, 88 wins. Now, teams like St. Louis and San Francisco who sold but still have some bones on their roster, maybe you could say they get hot and they get wild, and if things fall back to them, maybe they could make noise. But Arizona's pretty much punting. Miami's plucky, but I don't see that being any different than St. Louis or San Francisco. Pittsburgh, Atlanta, and of course the Nats haven't been in it. And Colorado's Colorado. So when you look at this, the Mets, and maybe Stearns looked at it when they were selling off some of this prospect capital, you're getting yourself in the tournament. Now, you'd really like to get into the tournament with the best seeding possible. And to do that, that'd be beating out the Phillies for the division, which the Mets right now, with a half-game lead, tied in the loss column, hold their own destiny on that. They play the Phillies quite a bit in the second half in the last couple of months of the season. So they could impact that in a big way. So the Mets didn't guarantee themselves anything but a postseason spot. And I hate to say guarantee, but I think there's a high percentage chance, short of a major health issue, short of some wacky, like kind of what we saw in June into early July, extreme performances to the wrong side of the ledger. The Mets put themselves in a big position. Now, they didn't have a deadline, and I think there's some disappointment about their ability to go out and get a starter. And Merrill Kelly was the only starter of any significance, and he was traded to Texas, and the Rangers have, and they've built their team a little bit differently in the sense where they've really gone all in on starting pitching, led by our former friend here, Jacob DeGrom. But really what you saw with what the Yankees did, what San Diego did here, what the Phillies did by bringing in Duran, and what the Dodgers have consistently done with their own resources, developing their own pitchers, a lot of times taking starters and putting them in the bullpen. I've said this over and over again. I've been saying this for a while, so this isn't anything that you haven't heard, and I'm sure it's not anything that's an aha that a front office type would say, yeah, that's a great finding, Mike. But the game is won or lost in 2025. The game of baseball is lost in the ninth inning. And truthfully, in the postseason, at the very least, it's lost in the seventh, eighth, or one in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. And the starters have zero impact on that. And that's not going to change anytime soon. Because for it to change, you'd have to develop, train, keep healthy a generation of pitchers. That's if you started today. And if you started today with the draft, depending on if it was a high school or a college arm, you're at least 6 to 10 years away from that changing. You're a decade away from that changing. We didn't get here overnight. It took time. It took a generation to get here. And we're here because about 10 years ago, things started to change. This Mets team is not going to be like if they got to the, if they won a pennant and went to the World Series for the first time since 2015, exactly 10 years ago. This Mets team is not like that team, which had starters like Harvey and Syndergaard and DeGrom that could go seven innings. And then all you had to do was hand off three innings to a bridge to, at that time, Jurys Familia. You're not just handing off three innings. You're not just trying to figure out three innings in a postseason series. You're trying to figure out 12, maybe 15, depending if you want to play matchups. And that's not going to change. And I think the Mets went into this deadline looking to be aggressive, looking to go for it. Now, you heard Andy Martino say, and maybe this is more talk from other front office types, not Stearns. Maybe Stearns is being politically correct because he contradicted Martino during his press conference yesterday. But the talk from Martino was, well, the Mets think the next 2 years is their window of opportunity. And then Stern says, hey, we're going to try to win the World Series every year. But maybe the Mets look, and I said this, I think I said it the other night during the Super Bullpen show. If you do look at the core offensive players, Alonso, Lindor, Nimmo, Soto's the really the early prime, in prime player. Nimmo late prime, Lindor entering late prime. Believe it or not, Pete's 30. He's at the back end of his prime, maybe starting in the early late prime. These are not, you know, McNeil is 33 years old. Now, obviously there are players, some who are on this roster. Maybe it's Mauricio, maybe it's Beatty, Alvarez, you know, whatever, that potentially will start to slide in as they're younger and they're entering their prime and replace these guys, and then the cycle starts with other young players. Maybe Carson Benj or Jet Williams falls into that conversation. So just because these guys are entering their late prime doesn't mean that the Mets are just going to all of a sudden go all 1997 Florida Marlins and just collapse it and rebuild. just means that there might be more of a sense of urgency. I'll throw Vientos, who's in a smack of his prime, in there too. He might be a solution. So I could see why they went for it, but Stearns really went for it and did the best of both worlds, because as much as everybody's complaining about the cost to get a Tyler Rogers or Helsley, or maybe more so Rogers and Mullins, the Mets didn't really give up outside of Baez, who is a raw talent by all accounts, as much as, you know, we may like what we see and hear and all that stuff. He didn't really give up anything of extreme pain. He didn't give up Jet Williams. He didn't give up Benj. He didn't give up Sproat. He didn't give up Tong. He didn't give up McClain. And I think there was a really good post over on X from a fan that I shared. And it was more about, hey, prospects are capital. And what we don't always look at, because sometimes it gets a little tricky to figure it out. It's available. You could figure it out. But there's a number of these pitchers that in the next year to 2 years, the Mets were going to have to add to their 40-man roster. And remember, you could put guys on 60-man IL, and you could, you know, obviously play a lot of games with the roster. But that 40-man roster fills up really quick. And if you have to put guys to protect them from being Rule 5 drafted, either on the minor league or major league side, which is not a fait accompli. You know, when you pick a 21-year-old good arm out of the minor leagues, high A, and you say, oh, I could lose him in the Rule 5 draft, well, that doesn't mean he'll stick with a big league club. But the point is that the Mets were going to have to start putting them on the 40-man. They were going to make a little bit more money in terms of being part of the 40-man. There's some extra benefits as a big league player. And it was going to restrict their movement. So these guys might have been traded anyway at some point. And why not get capital now? I think that plays a lot into that. That certainly plays into it with guys like Tidwell and Gilbert. Gilbert, who was not on the 40-man, Tidwell, who's been already contributing to this club. And it was going to be like that for some of the other arms that are on there, the Ramon Gomez, the Anthony Nunez, guys like that. These are all lottery tickets. Now, are they scratch-offs that could maybe yield you a nice payday? I think there's probably a couple that could do that. Maybe in 3 or 4 years, one of these guys will be coming out of the bullpen somewhere, and you're like, wow, I really wish they had that kind of arm. What were they thinking? Is there a win for life? You know, maybe Baez turns into a really solid third baseman. Maybe turns into Eugenio Suarez at some point down the road. Remember Nelson Cruz of the Rangers? He was a low A, nothing prospect. Mets traded him for a backup shortstop in 2000 as depth. That's what they did. And I can't remember the player's name. Jorge Valencia from Oakland. And, I mean, he bounced around. And then he turned out to be a really solid offensive player and had some postseason heroics for the Texas Rangers. And he had a really good career. But you wouldn't have known that in 2000 because you're like, hey, who cares about this kid in A-ball, the Dominican Summer League? The Mets need some reinforcements in case their shortstop gets hurt in the postseason. So, you know, we know how that happens. But any deal or any good deal, there's going to be pain on both sides. And I think whatever pain the Mets had inflicted on them with the prices that they had to pay, and you could argue, did they have to pay more versus the Yankees versus some other teams? Maybe. Maybe there's a Cohen tax. Maybe people don't want to see Stearns be successful in the biggest market in the country. There's a lot of other factors, I'm sure, that goes into that. And I think that if you're competing with other teams and you want to guarantee that you get the deal done, sometimes you have to put your chips to the center of the table and make sure the other team doesn't beat you. And I see a lot of quantity deals. I didn't necessarily see the Mets give up huge quality. And the one piece that maybe people are talking about, Baez, I think Gilbert's more of a component player. And with Benj in the fold and with Soto and Nimmo still ensconced in their whole situation, and with what you have at the big league level at the DH spot, potentially Vientos and Mauricio, I don't see him as somebody that's going to cause pain. Maybe it's Baez. Baez might be the one at some point that causes that. If he ever makes it up with the Cardinals, or the Cardinals take that capital and wind up doing something with it. So I think that's where the whole, you know, prospect situation is. You know, as far as the league, I mean, everybody clearly has the same mindset. They would love a starter. Starters are expensive. They get hurt. And let's face it, they're still, in best case scenario, probably only going to give you 6 innings. And maybe even if they can go further, there's always that hesitation now in the modern game to do the third time around the order, regardless, except if they're the elite of the elite, like a DeGrom type, who he even can't probably go deep into games anymore because of health. But you're probably only going to get 6 innings at best. So you're still going to need a loaded bullpen. And I think everybody is like almost in this bullpen arms race, and that's what you saw most of the activity. And teams, Yankees trying to do it, Mets doing it, Phillies maybe just trying to get on par where, you know, when they had a better closer because they've had such problems in the ninth inning. But teams, especially like the Mets and the Yankees, trying to create super bullpens with multiple closers and essentially lock the game down from the sixth inning on. Hope that their starters could do enough and their offenses are good enough to get a lead going into the sixth or seventh inning. And then, hey, other team might have some arms that are going to make it hard to score, but we're just going to put up zeros. And if you have a lead and you put up zeros from the sixth or seventh inning on, you're going to win the ball game. Now, as far as the sense of urgency, I think that the collective bargaining agreement has to be playing a little bit into some of these teams' minds. Now, what Preller did in San Diego is insane, and I'm trying to find it here. I posted it up on X. I mean, the amount of capital he gave up. Here I have it. No, that's not it. Here it is. I mean, he gave up the number one ranked prospect in the system, the number three, the number four, the number six, the number seven, the number 12, the number 13. I mean, he totally, and this is, let me count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 prospects. I mean, but he brought in an elite closer with control. He brought in a really good bullpen piece in Sears. He brought in component offensive pieces. I thought the Padres are tough even before all this. Very well on paper. They might be the best team in the National League. They might be on par with the Dodgers. And ironically, they'd play the Mets in San Diego, at Citi Field, like they did in 2022 again if the playoffs started today. There's a lot there. We'll see what happens. But, it's just amazing about how they, you know, a guy like Preller did that. And I think part of it is we just don't know what the league is going to look like after next year. I, at the very least, think that the owners are going to have to walk away with some kind of situation where they feel there is penalties or restrictions on clubs that spend at a certain level. Similar to the NBA, similar to how there's these aprons and then you become much more restrictive at those aprons to making certain moves or being able to build your roster. Now, ultimately, I'm sure the players will look at that as somewhat of a salary cap, and it is. But it may also get to the point where a Mets team can't go out and just buy a veteran for every position because that player is going to be able to make more money going to, let's say, Pittsburgh or Tampa or Kansas City. And the Mets are going to have to maybe fill that with a more of a minimum salaried player out of their farm system. And that's where, you know, maybe guys are saying, hey, if I'm going to win now, if I'm going to get that first notch on my belt with the current rules, I got maybe two shots of this apple. Now, the other thing is, and I can't speak for Preller in San Diego because that's wild what they did, but I think Stearns, and you've heard Martino talk about this over at SNY, I think Stearns is supremely confident that he just had a draft. Some of the guys that he gave up are his guys, not all of them. Tidwell wasn't, Gilbert wasn't. Baez has been here, I think, a little bit. He's just saying, hey, I know how to build a farm system. I did it in Milwaukee. I was sustainably good in Milwaukee. I was able to plug my holes in Milwaukee. I have a bigger budget here. Even with new rules, I'm still going to be able to be at the deep end of the pool if they are willing and able, these players, to engage with the Mets to get who I need. And I'll have another draft next year. I just drafted a bunch of players this year. I don't need to hold on to everybody. And we've had conversations with our good friend Ernie Dove. you can't keep everybody, and there's tons of duplication. Now, if you told me going into the deadline that the Mets would be able to, as much as I've been critical of them, keep all their core baby Mets on the big league roster, keep all their top, key top fives. They only gave up one top 10 in Baez. And walk away with the needs they had, which is another bat with some upside and two really good, if not elite, bullpen arms to solidify their most glaring weakness and the one area that you cannot go into a postseason series with question marks. What I ultimately believe derailed them last year, albeit I don't know even with a better bullpen if they could have beaten the Dodgers because of how many challenges their starters had. And they didn't have to give up a Vientos, a Mauricio, a Beatty, a tops, you know, a painful top 10. I would not have believed that, especially when you talk about bringing in a second closer, which I didn't even think they were able to do. I really thought, listening to Stearns, going into the homestand, going into the series against Anaheim just over a week ago, that they were going to have a, maybe a better deadline than a year ago, but a similar one. Let me bring in a Phil Maton type to shore up the bullpen. Let me go out and get a young arm like a Brazenbaum last year that has potential to be a really good piece to help Diaz as a second closer. They didn't go that route. They went the veteran route. And they also brought in, and I guess you got to put Soto in there because he was acquired leading up to the deadline the week before. They have different looks now. And I think that was where there was some debate late in the day yesterday about how the Yankees, what seems like a really light package, got Camilo Doval from the Giants. And, you know, to me, all right, you want to say one-on-one, Doval is better. He's really good against left-handed pitching. He strikes out guys. You know, he's a former closer. You know, he's all the things that you want. But he's another guy that walks a lot of guys. He's another guy that is somewhat of that feeling of, you know, he reminds me a lot of Reed Garrett, which is a good pitcher. Don't get me wrong. It's not chopped liver, but they're no sure thing. The Mets needed some calm and consistency, and I think Rodgers gives them that. He gives them another look. He doesn't walk batters. It really, the league has got to start looking at pitchers that could give you some consistent strike throwing out of the bullpen and soft contact. Not everybody has to have 13 strikeouts per nine, and who cares about the five or six walks? If you look at many of the Mets' problems on the pitching side, this goes back to last year, it's walks. And truthfully, the biggest issue, go to Fangraphs, you could sort it, it's free, it's publicly available. The reason the Mets' starters don't go deep is they walk too many batters. The walk issue, which is still an issue in the bullpen, not to the level of last year, is now in the starting rotation. And, I mean, I think Peterson's the exception at that point. I mean, you go up and down. Holmes, 3.5 walks per nine. Not horrible, but he has his moments. Senga's at over four. When Griffin Canning was here, he was over four. McGill's over four. Montas is actually not that bad. Manaea is actually pretty good, even though I felt like it. So it's getting better. But, I mean, overall, and maybe that has to do with some of the in and out they've had. I mean, they have one of the higher walk rates out of the starting rotation in the league. So that's a problem. So that's kind of where you're at there. Now, as far as Mullins and that deal, it doesn't bother me. They're all lottery tickets the Mets gave up. Do I think that that would have been the first option I would have went to? I did like the idea, more so as time went on, of Luis Robert Jr. because I liked the upside potential and the controllability. But the rumors, if they were true, I mean, they wanted maybe one of the Mets' top pitching prospects for him. And no, not for a guy that's been bad for 2 years, that's been in a losing environment, you know, that has an injury history. I'm not doing that. I'm only doing that if maybe I give you a higher level lottery ticket or somebody that may come back to haunt me. Now, you tell me Vientos for Robert Jr., that's different. And I'm sure maybe that still was going to be the case even with the prospect. I think the White Sox saw a controllable young potential, and I mean, people laughed when I said it. The White Sox probably look at him and like, hey, he's our Pete Carl Armstrong. Maybe he's not playing like it this year. Maybe it's been a couple of years, but yeah, look at 2023. He was Pete Carl Armstrong. I'm not just going to give him away for Mark Vientos, a potential one-dimensional DH that may only hit lefties. I mean, they're looking at these things. If I'm looking at it a certain way, they're looking at it that plus more. So you go out, Bader been there, done that. You probably have him in Tyrone Taylor. Who else is left? Well, it's Cedric Mullins. The Mets only had so many areas to improve. If you didn't believe in the baby Mets, the corner baby Mets, where were you going to do? Suarez, that was going to be expensive. It wasn't like there was third baseman all around. You heard about Laureano and guys like that. More component guys. That's a guy who hits lefties. Corner guy. They really don't need a corner guy. They needed a center fielder. It was center field, a DH type, or third base. And I think they feel on the DH type and third base, they got that covered between Marte and the baby Mets and what have you. So center field was where it's at, and Mullins was what was left. And because Mullins was what was left, and because it was a light market once Bader went off the board and once Robert Jr. wasn't an option, they had to pay for him. Now he's lefty. The question I have is you go to Baseball Savant and you look a little bit about his history is here's a guy that was a good base runner and a good defensive player, maybe not the best arm, but good range. Those things have declined over the last couple of years. I get the league average offense. By the way, league average offense is something that you shouldn't sneer at because at times you haven't gotten that in center field. You haven't always gotten that at second base before McNeil came back. You haven't gotten it at third base. You haven't gotten it behind the plate all the time. So to sneer at what Mullins is giving, he's had a big valley for a while, early summer, so that played into some of the numbers going down. You know, like, fans are acting like the Mets are fielding the 61 Yankees up and down the lineup here. They're not. Now, recently, with how the component kids have come around, Mauricio played better, Beatty's played better, Alvarez has been much better and much more serious since coming back from Syracuse. Essentially, you're replacing Tyrone Taylor, who's miscast as an everyday player, who's a backup outfielder, and putting a former All-Star, solidified veteran into center field. And you could still, if you don't like his defense late in games and you feel that Taylor's an upgrade, which he probably is on the glove side, just sub him out. I mean, he hits left-handed pitching. Historically, that hasn't been his forte, but he's been doing that this year, so you don't have to worry about that. He's going to see more righties than lefties, so that's the problem. He's been struggling against righties. And the other thing about a Mullins, you know, maybe walk year, getting out of Baltimore where things haven't been going well. I know a couple of years ago they were a 100-win team. You know, maybe he just needs to change his scenery, and he has that contract drive. You don't know. What will be interesting, and I'll be in the building tonight for fireworks night against the Giants, so I'll see it firsthand. Do these moves, the super bullpen, how the Mets now could lock the game down, show different types of, looks for the opposition? Does the fact that Stearns, who learned because of the whole Josh Hader and how it destroyed the trade that he made in Milwaukee a couple of years back on his final seasons in Milwaukee, where he pulled Hader out of that bullpen to try to make a move to win now and secure the future, and how it demoralized the clubhouse. Does this do the opposite where it energizes the clubhouse? Because let's face it, the Mets have had a weird time of it since mid-June. I'm not saying they're loafing. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, why has there been this malaise? Now, some of it is when you don't hit and you struggle offensively, you look dead. That's always going to be the case in baseball. But do the Mets come, and I think the fans will be jacked up, do the Mets come in today with a new sense of energy and purpose and sense of urgency? Because now it's about getting it done. And one of the big questions, and I'm not getting into it today, because today is about setting up this third and final regular season phase. Can this team start to win on the road? They showed you the blueprint on Sunday night, on Sunday Night Baseball, and then they reverted back to what you've seen a lot of throughout the year, non-competitive, sloppy baseball. Non-competitive largely, non-competitive on both sides of the ball, and when they've had an opportunity to win, mistakes and late-inning sloppiness and bad bullpen. Now, you probably solved the bad bullpen, but be that as it may. And then the final real cherry on top here, which might be an interesting wrinkle or storyline, shall I say, to the season, is do we finally see the top arms that we've been hearing about? We're not going to see Tong, but Sproat and McClain clearly are in the crosshairs of being big leaguers. And I don't want to, like, start comparing. But there is a bit of a feel of Harvey and Matz and Syndergaard and DeGrom. I mean, some of the anticipation that we had Wheeler back then. Not in the same way. I mean, what the Mets had was so fortunate, so special. A lot of luck. They acquired two of those guys in Syndergaard and Wheeler. And, you know, they got... I mean, nobody would have thought DeGrom would become who he was. It was supposed to be Rafael... it was supposed to be Montero. And, you know, I don't know if that's what the Mets have here with Sproat and McClain and then eventually Tong and who knows who else can maybe join them that we're not even talking about now. That was special. And they stayed relatively healthy for at least a majority of their Mets career. Towards the end, it got a little dicey. But, you know, that is the next storyline. Will those kids come up? Will they be a part of the rotation? Will they get a postseason start? Will the Mets see something and say, I could really use them out of the bullpen? Will they allow the Mets to add another closer to the bullpen and maybe turn Holmes, for a variety of reasons, performance, times around the order, innings restrictions, into a bulk reliever? And then you got another closer. I mean, hypothetically, taking the two lefties out of the equation for matchups in Raley and Soto, you could go Holmes, Rogers, Helsley, Diaz. Those guys all could close. I know Rogers hasn't really closed, but why can't he close? Why not? Why? Because he hasn't? Because he throws sidearm? Because his fastball's only 83? He had 13 saves in 2021. He's done it a little bit. So there's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to be anticipating about. The Mets, I think the only thing that they walked away, and I'm not giving grades or I'm not making predictions, I think the Mets put themselves in a spot where there is at least going to be the opportunity for 3 days in October. At the very least. I'd be very surprised if that didn't happen. And I know that makes people uncomfortable. It made my good friend Anthony Rivera uncomfortable when I said that on the show last night on the live stream. But we have to look at this in mathematical probabilities. And unless Cincinnati's going to all of a sudden play at a 90-plus win pace, which could happen. I mean, let's not discount it completely. You know, they're kind of in the same spot last year's OMG Mets were at this time. The Mets are going to be in the postseason. I have been hard on this club. I said I didn't think they were a playoff team just a couple of weeks ago. I said I didn't know if they were a team worth investing in. And I think Stearns answered the bell on both of those things because I think he agreed with me on at least the questions about the playoffs. And they invested in a way which I think is as responsible as you can when your competition, and your competition is also the Yankees because they're trying to win their league, is going out and plucking off not one but multiple big arm relievers, which was your biggest need. And when the prices of controllable talent, either on the pitching side or the offensive side, are so astronomical where you may be giving up the next, Syndergaard, Matz, or Pete Crow Armstrong for, yes, a controllable piece, but one that maybe you could buy on the free agent market. And then you look at the delta between a Mason Miller and a Ryan Helsley and what you would have to give up one versus the other. I think that the investment was wise for where this team is. And I think any GM going forward has to make that decision. Because in a three wild card world, we are now, and baseball has become, and I've said this for years, it's a tournament sport. Even if you win the division, all you get, look at what Philadelphia got. They got 4 October games. And all it took was that loss on Saturday night to the Mets at home in a game that Zach Wheeler dominated and their bullpen, which was good all year, botched. And your whole season, everything you worked for, gets turned upside down on your head. That's all it takes. It's a tournament sport. So you have to constantly balance one versus the other. The days of all in and what a lot of writers grew up as all in, even with the early days of a wild card, are way different. Because in 1988, all in meant I win my division. I need 4 wins to get to the World Series. Now, I need 2 wins maybe just to get to the NLDS, which gives me 3 wins, which is 5, which gives me now another 4, which is 9, just to get to the World Series. I got to win more than double the amount of games, and all the crap that could happen in between makes you have to say, hey, that's why what AJ Preller did is crazy. But, you know, the good ones are going to be the ones that take the appropriate risks, and the ones that when they take the risk with the prospect capital know that, hey, I know how to create a pipeline where I got more of the same coming up along the way. So, wild deadline. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the show. Now, weekend series here, Mets playing the Giants. Going to try to work on some things. Really enjoyed doing the live stream. I've been promising you guys spaces. I'll see what I can do. Stay tuned. When it comes to the spaces or a live stream, I've decided, you know, if you're a subscriber, even if you're a free subscriber, you don't want to do the paid thing, subscribe to the Substack, because I'll just say, hey, I'm going to be on this live stream. Maybe you're not on X, you know, and the live stream is a YouTube thing. You don't have to be on X. The spaces, even if you're not a big Twitter X guy, just come on over and listen. Or I have to see. I think there's recordings of that, and I think I could always post those, so maybe that's something I could do. But I'll use that as kind of a clearinghouse, the Substack, to kind of give you news about what's going on. It'll be an interesting weekend. I'll be in the building, and I'm really looking tonight to see the energy of the team, the energy of the crowd. They all should be energized. This was a big deal what the Mets did. They really sent a really cool message. This is a dynamic time in the team's history. I've never, and I think everybody compared 2015, the deadline, maybe a little bit there because of the Cespedes move. I've never seen a deadline this dynamic in team history, this all in, this much strategy and thought, and the fact that they're able to do what they did with non-controllable players, have the confidence that if they want to keep them, they could, and have the confidence that they gave up stuff that may hurt them, but that, hey, by the way, I have a version of that that I'm going to wind up developing right behind them. Now, does that mean it'll happen? You and I know, maybe not. But I'll tell you what, I have good confidence that there's going to be some coming up on the back end that will make up for what they lost. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this Friday morning. Of course, you could check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy a weekend of baseball. It's time to go get it done. Till next time, take care, everybody.